Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
If you take a look closely at the animals and plants that straddle the border of Asia and Australia, you'll notice there are some remarkable differences, and there's a reason for that. It's called the Wallace lime. Here to tell us all about it is Ian McFadden. He's a lecturer in computational ecology at Queen Mary University of London. Welcome to the program, Ian. How are you?
Thank you. Great to be here. Happy New Year. I'm doing well.
Tell me, what exactly is the Wallace lime, Ian, and when did we first hear about it?
Well, I just want to very quickly start by saying the project was done by an 11-person team, and that the lion's share of the work, or should I say the kangaroo share, was done by Dr. Alex Skeels at Australian National University. But yeah, it was all about the Wallace line. And this line is a geographic border between two realms of animal biodiversity in the Indo-Pacific, the Asian realm to the west and the Australian realm to the east. And so in the west, you have cats, you have orangutans and other larger mammals. And then in the east, you have birds like the birds of paradise and the cassowaries, and of course, the marsupials like the kangaroos. And so it's this demarcation between these two realms. And it's got a lot of deep time history to it as well.
I'd never considered this before, but there is a sort of a major division in biodiversity. Right? In above and below this line. Can you tell me exactly where it passes through and how sharp is it? Because the way you describe those animals there, they you know, these are very, anatomically very different. Can you tell me a little bit about the line where it is and how sharp the difference is?
Yes. Yeah. And so it's in the Indo-Pacific archipelago. Some people call it the Malay archipelago. Spanning from Sumatra to New Guinea in Southeast Asia and Australasia. And it's cutting right in between the islands of Bali and Lombok in Indonesia. So you can actually, once you get to Indonesia, follow in Wallace's footsteps using a ferry and take it from Bali, where you don't hear any cockatoos, the big white parrot native to Australia. And then once you arrive, you know, a few miles away in Lombok, you do.
And this extends how far exactly, before we get into the details of what's north and what's south?
Yes, it divides the Philippines in the north and the island of Borneo a bit farther south down into Bali and Java. That's all on the western side of the line. And then in the east, you have the island of Sulawesi and Lombok and the area of islands called Wallacea, also named after Alfred Russel Wallace, and then going farther east into New Guinea and Australia.
And this difference between north and south is from this guy, Alfred Russel Wallace, who was also discovering the process behind evolution at the same time as Darwin. Is that right? Tell me a little bit about him.
That's right. Yeah. A colleague once referred to him as the perpetual underdog. So he was traipsing around these islands in the 1800s, and he was in a malarial fever. And he started putting the pieces together in his head, and he came up with the theory of natural selection. And he said, you know who I should send this to? My buddy Darwin. And he sent it to Darwin, and Darwin and his colleagues read this and said, let's read our two papers out at the same time in London and publish essentially the theory of evolution. And so he was a really interesting collaborator and colleague and friend of Darwin.
Wow. God, Darwin won the fame game in that particular standoff, didn't he? God, I've never heard of Wallace. So this Wallace's line, you talk about different adaptations of animals from marsupial pouches to different types of birds. It's unusual, I suppose, to me, or very surprising to hear that there are groups of animals that have evolved different types of traits that have nothing to do with each other. We're talking about birds and mammals, for example.
Yeah, that's true. And I think what that has to do is the long periods of isolation. So Australia, for example, is this island continent where marsupials evolved there and very few other places. And so they went down a different evolutionary path and used these marsupial pouches. And then on the continent of Asia, you have placental mammals, cats, monkeys, things like that, that are just did something differently because they were evolving way over there in Asia.
But it doesn't seem like at the border, these species are that far apart. I mean, of course, birds can migrate very easily. Why, for example, do we see such differences in birds?
Yeah, well, it certainly makes sense for the mammals. Yeah, the cats and things like that. We know that cats don't like water and would have trouble spreading across these barriers. But we also know that there are these rainforest birds that specialize in the dense rainforest canopy and don't like to cross open spaces. So Alfred Russel Wallace himself was actually traveling in the Amazon, and he found that there were certain species of monkeys, for example, that didn't like to cross the Amazon River. And I'm not sure if this is also true for birds as well, but that's a much shorter border than the one of the Wallace's line. And so these are very kind of sedentary species that don't like to cross big open water barriers, even for birds that have the physical ability to do so.
So talk to me about the significance of this Wallace line from a scientific point of view. Why is it of interest to researchers?
Yeah, it's quite interesting for those that study biogeography, that are interested in the distribution of life on Earth, because again, these two faunas are coming so close together. And it's kind of like a slow motion car crash of tectonic plates that are carrying all these different species on it. And sometimes they're spreading to the west of the line, sometimes they're spreading east of the line in this case, and that's called a faunal interchange. And so we want to know how life has assembled over time on Earth. And so this is a great natural laboratory to do that. And also for scientists that are interested in studying climate change, it gives you an example of how species have crossed over the line and thrived in new climates or not, depending on various factors. And so this is what species will have to do to adapt to climate change as well.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the species that have crossed this line? Because presumably there is a serious difference in the environment because we see such extraordinary difference in adaptations. Marsupials, for example, do not exist above the line and are common below it. Are there species that have crossed the line and flourished in the other environment, either side of the Wallace line? And how do we know that they made that journey?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in our study, we found about 300 crossings of the line, if I'm not mistaken. And so certainly plenty of animals have done those crossings from the west to the east and vice versa. And another major finding was essentially that the ones that came from the wetter parts in the west did much better at spreading across the line because the stepping stones to get across the line are quite humid and ever wet. And the ones from Australia that started in that drier climate, while they might be able to get there, they might not be able to survive and thrive. It's sort of like if you're going on a vacation to Spain, you have to be able to get a flight, and it also shouldn't be too hot or too cold if you want to actually enjoy it. So that was one of the main take-homes from the study, that there's been a lot of crossing, but that this interchange has been quite unidirectional, mainly from the west to the east.
So from a geological point of view, what separates north and south of this sort of imaginary line that above and below see such different species?
Yeah, so a lot of it has to do with the Australian or the Sahul tectonic plate crashing northwards up into the Asian plate. And so the plate went underneath the other one and caused these islands to form. And it's actually one of the strangest geological formations in the world. There's all these different chunks of plates crashing into each other and islands popping up and disappearing. And so generally, that's why you have the two faunas so close to each other, because the plates are coming close to each other.
I mean, when we talk about tectonic plates, we're obviously talking about very, very slow movement. And yet, this wasn't that long ago, evolutionarily, 35 million years.
Yeah. So I think there's been about 30 million years of evolution in the study, in our study. And we did kind of this game of life simulation over the past 30 million years to show when the plates were a bit farther apart and then they crashed into each other. And so that's enough time for a lot of species to evolve. For example, the birds of paradise in New Guinea and several other taxa. And so there's just kind of this evolutionary arena being played out over time.
So as the world has moved on and together, as we see these two tectonic plates smashing together, 35 million years later, are crossings over the Wallace line a lot more common? Is the line a lot more blurry than it might have been many years ago?
Yeah, so I think geologically speaking, there are more and more crossings as time goes on and the plates become closer together and the distances that the animals need to cross get shorter and shorter. And then in the modern day, in the past 2,000 or few hundred years, humans are moving species all around and blurring these geographic or biogeographic boundaries of species a lot more. And so I think, it's just kind of ever increasing on lots of timescales.
So these mammals and lizards that were separated went off and evolved their own specific adaptations north and south of this line. What about flora? What about plants? Is there a distinct subspecies and species and adaptations that are just found south of the Wallace line that aren't found north and vice versa?
That is a really great question and something that I'm super excited about in my own research personally. So in general, plants are better dispersers than animals. And so the Wallace's line for plants either doesn't exist or is very, very blurry indeed. And that's true for things like figs that have these little seeds that can spread all over. But you look at certain taxa that are eaten by larger animals, like on the western side of the line, there's the big, stinky, spiky green durian fruit, which is eaten by orangutans and perhaps even tigers. The durians don't cross Wallace's line from the west to the east. Some species have crossed Wallace's line, like in the genus Aglaia, and those are blown up into these giant red fruits that are eaten by the giant cassowary birds that look kind of like ostriches that live in New Guinea. And so you see certain fruits with certain adaptations, especially the larger ones, to the larger animals that are only found on either side of the line. And so as you go up in fruit size, you might see a bit of a sharper Wallace's line.
Ah, so what you're saying is that as the seeds travel, and if they manage to survive, they're forced to adapt differently. And so they are technically the same species, but they have adapted and evolved to look very different.
Yeah, the same evolutionary lineages, but then it would spawn new species that are having those new adaptations that you were just referring to.
Really interesting. It's something I'd never come across. And I have to try and remember that name, Alfred Russel Wallace, Darwin's partner in developing the theory of evolution. Ian McFadden, lecturer in computational ecology, Queen Mary University of London, and expert on the Wallace line. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.